Hanging in the night sky over London. On a rooftop in the city, a sinister figure bursts into life. Closer inspection, the figure wears a plastic-looking and quite grotesque face mask. In his office at the police station, Chandler's alarmed as the team in the main office share a laugh. Mansell brings in a beer barrel.
This room is a book for 9:30.
Aren't you?
I told him it was just a few drinks to cheer him up.
This Mansell's second divorce, this is what it takes to cheer him up. Is that your special ginger cake?
It certainly is extra gooey.
Good girl.
Miles, use a plate. How many people have you invited?
Oh, it's just us. Don't worry, I borrowed a mop from the canteen in case things get out of hand.
But no one is to touch a drop of alcohol until the shift ends. Thank you.
You need to learn to enjoy yourself. You can't keep being the boss of parties. Relax, loosen up.
You've turned the incident into a drinking den.
Yeah, good job, I thought.
The masked figure stalks through the streets with its arms outstretched. Inside a well-to-do townhouse, a little blonde girl, Evie, enters her living room, clutching a teddy bear.
Yeah. Uh-huh. She showed me the texts. Yeah, I'll finish with you. It's over. Done. Did I stutter? Check my status, baby. I feel that.
The babysitter, Sasha, hangs up.
I just dumped TC. Got any ice cream in the freezer? Let's go have a look.
Sasha!
What is it?
I'm scared.
What have you got to be scared of, hun?
The bogeyman.
Hey, listen. Bogeymen, they live in, like, drains and swamps and under bridges and in ooey-gooey smelly places. They don't come into pretty houses. So you've got nothing to be scared of, okay?
Outside the house in the darkened yard, the sinister figure emerges from the shadows. The mask gives the figure the appearance of an aging, grim-faced man with slick black hair and a big pointy nose. Inside the house, Sasha and Evie are on the sofa, enjoying a tub of ice cream together. Right outside the French windows, in a long dark overcoat, the masked figure stands tall, takes a big breath, and looks up at the sky. Whitechapel. Drawings of grotesque figures, humans with distended or demonic faces. Rupert Penry-Jones. A plastic front mask burns. Phil Davis. A black-gloved hand unfurls. Steve Pemberton. The masked figure clutches a knife. A flash of light reflects off the sharp blade. Spanning the Thames River, Tower Bridge is lit up by night. Just past 8 p.m, Ed Buchan sits in a therapist's office staring at the clock. Brunette therapist Morgan takes out a notebook and pen and eyes Buchan.
Tell me why you're here.
I haven't slept for weeks.
Why is that?
I'm a researcher. I work in a crime archive and I support murder investigations.
And why is that affecting your sleep?
Because I killed two girls.
I just want to thank you, sir, for allowing us to have this small commiseration.
Quite all right.
I was going to say it's not every day I get divorced, but actually it is.
Well, I'm sure you'll find someone who's right for you.
Oh, finding them's easy. Keeping them ain't.
Present for you. For the long, lonely night.
Oh, wow! My dad used to have these. Where'd you get them?
A retro place in Spitalfields.
Oh, these are vintage, Ray. Real class. Oh, you've got to love a hairy bird. Look.
Not long now, we can pop the cork.
You did it,
son. We've been sent an alert. Calvin Mantis escaped from a high-security psychiatric hospital. He used to live in Whitechapel. Might try and come back.
I remember Mantis.
Did you work the case?
No, but I knew some of the boys who did. They needed counselling after what they saw.
At Evie's house.
Your mum and dad will kill me if you're still awake when they get back.
They entered the bathroom.
No one here. No bogeyman.
She pulls back the shower curtain. Evie scans anxiously.
Check the kitchen.
You get into bed, undo your covers, and I'll go check the kitchen. Deal?
Deal.
I became obsessed with what was missing from the archive. With what wasn't there. The cruel irony is that what I needed was right in front of me. I was just too distracted to notice. Had I not made this mistake, the killer would have been apprehended, and the two girls would have been spared their terrible fate.
At Evie's house, Sasha heads along the narrow hallway into the kitchen downstairs. She opens the fridge.
Kitchen safe, baby, all checked.
She takes out a bottle of beer and shuts the fridge door. She answers the house phone.
Hello? Oh, hi. You know, everything's fine. You've just gone to bed. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, of course I haven't touched any of your lager.
Mantis murdered his parents and his 10-year-old sister when he was 20.
When was this?
2001. He was judged unfit to stand trial.
Criminally insane?
That's his most recent photo.
At Evie's house.
Nighttime, 5 minutes, yeah?
With the bottle in her hand, Sasha comes back downstairs. She goes into the living room and stops. She glances over her shoulder, nervously. The French windows are open, the net curtains blow softly in the breeze. Sasha wears denim hot pants over black tights and a spangly two-tone crop top. Her long hair is pulled back into a ponytail, revealing big hoopy earrings. She steps towards the open windows with a nervous frown. The moonlight casts an eerie glow through the glass as she shuts the windows. With her back to the room, Sasha realigns the curtains. She turns and scans around wide-eyed. In the therapy session with Buchan.
It's not unusual to feel the way you do. I've worked with junior doctors who've experienced similar feelings of guilt. And I'm going to tell you what I tell them. In your line of work, people are going to die. Now, you can learn to deal with that, or you can find another job.
My job is everything to me.
Well, then you have a tough choice to make.
Buchan fidgets, his hands knitted at his chin. At Evie's house, Sasha's on her mobile.
TC, babes, I know we've just split up, but I really need you to come round because I am seriously freaking out. Will you call me back, yeah?
She hasn't noticed the masked figure standing in the doorway.
Oh, hi, it's Sasha. Evie's fine.
Sasha hangs up her phone and turns round as the masked figure approaches. Sasha's eyes widen as she screams. Little Evie watches from behind the banisters on the stairs as the masked figure forces Sasha to the floor. The party's underway at the police station. Chandler transfers the call from his office phone.
D.R. Chandler? Yeah? Right, okay. Thank you. We have a murder.
Flashes of a mask burning, a knife penetrates flesh. On the sofa, her eyes are open as if she's watching TV. As an officer photographs the body, Miles heads over to Chandler.
Dead girl is Sasha Lowood, teenage babysitter. Evie Pixley, the little girl, survived and called 999. We're still trying to locate her parents.
She hasn't been shot or stabbed. Was strangled.
She has defensive wounds to her hands, so there was a struggle.
She's been very carefully posed, so the killer probably spent some time here tidying up. Mantis?
I don't know. Wouldn't be like him to leave anyone alive.
Riley's still trying to coax the little girl out from under the bed.
Evie, there's lots of nice policemen here to protect you, okay? Your mummy and your daddy are coming. You're safe, sweetheart. You can come out, come on.
Evie backs further away at the police station.
Ken, give me that file on Calvin Mantis.
Yes, sir.
The team study the incident board.
Mantis murdered his family during their Sunday lunch.
Then he sat them back in their chairs like nothing had happened and finished his dinner. He wanted to eat his meal in silence.
He killed them and then he posed them. So the question is, did he kill and pose Sasha Lowood tonight? And Mantis' house isn't far from here.
Uniform's already there in case he comes home.
I know. But now there's been a murder, I want you two to go there, search the house from top to bottom. If there's anything that links Mantis to Sasha, I want it found.
Sir.
Everyone else? If he's not at his house, he has to be somewhere. Find him.
The photos on the incident board show Mantis's family slumped around their table covered in blood. In the men's room, Chandler changes his shirt, revealing a sculpted chest and flat stomach. He does up his shirt sleeves with cufflinks, then eyes himself in the mirror. He smiles, satisfied. Back in the incident room, he turns the whiteboard over and starts to write. Miles joins him.
I can do that.
And I like it. I like the process. It helps me see things clearly.
Is that a new shirt?
Crime scenes make me feel grubby.
Listen, if you're going to have a wobble and start counting out piles of coloured pins, you've got to let me know.
This isn't the beginning of a crisis. It's basic hygiene.
Yeah, well, I'm keeping an eye.
Riley arrives, dumps her coat and bag, and approaches Chandler.
I finally got Evie out from under the bed.
Is she talking?
She feels completely responsible because she hid her peas in her pockets. Well, our parents are brought up to believe that if you don't eat your tea, the bogeyman will come and get you.
Progressive parenting.
My mum would tell me that that was the bogeyman knocking at the door. I was terrified, but it made me behave, though.
Evie's convinced she saw the bogeyman kill Sasha. She's even given us a detailed description.
Of a man dressed in dark clothing, wearing a mask, with a bag over his shoulder.
Here comes the bogeyman dressed in black, carrying children with his sack on his back.
Down to the river to watch them drown. And wasn't there something about sitting on their bodies and chewing their bones?
Yeah. Probably.
Well, it may sound silly to you, but she's only eight. It's a way of making sense of what she saw.
Yeah. On a part of the board headed persons of interest, Chandler writes the word bogeyman. A train travels through the night. Manson and Kent are outside Mantis's house.
The house has never been sold, never been squatted, never been used by crackheads.
Why not?
Locals say it's haunted. The ghost of Daisy Mantis runs around at night screaming.
They head for the front door, where uniformed officers stand guard. They go inside. Kent leads the way by torchlight.
Shh!
All right, calm down. Well, come on, out of the way, Grandma.
Mansell pushes past Kent in the narrow, cobweb-strewn hallway. Also holding a torch, Mansell opens a door into the living room. He shines the light around the average-looking furniture positioned around a TV set.
So this is where they all died, then?
Kent's at the dining table.
My auntie's a psychic. She says buildings like this absorb negative energy. If you find a cold spot, you know you're in trouble. It means there's a ghost.
Shall we have a seance? We can ask him where Mantis is.
Don't joke about these things.
Why not?
Who am I going to offend?
Mansell shines the beam under his chin and pulls a wicked grin. Kent rolls his eyes. As a train passes, there's a flash of the dead family round the table. Kent clenches his jaw. Buchan sits at his desk in the archive, looking solemn.
Where's that box of unexplained cases?
What do you want that nonsense for?
Oh, I need it. Where is it?
But they're a record of public hysteria, mythologies, urban legends. These files are fit only for folklorists, not police.
They're still history, even if you don't like it. Oh!
She carries a file to the desk.
So what is it you're after, then? The Beast of Bodmin? The Devil's Footprints? The Owl Man?
I'm looking for a file on the Bogeyman.
You do realise that none of this is real?
Well, it's real enough to report to the police.
She finds a faded illustration of a spindly figure.
It's our prime suspect.
At the Mantis house, Kent and Mansell continue their search into another cobweb-covered room. Mansell shines his torch at the far wall and finds it daubed with a painting of a sinister-looking man in a top hat.
Whoa! Looks a bit like you, mate.
Heh heh.
Hey! My dad used to have a camera like this when I was like 12. Bless him. Used to make loads of horror movies with my mates. Tons of tomato sauce.
Put it back.
All right. What a beauty.
Mansell finds a film projector.
Wonder if it works. Oops.
you have to break everything you touch?
Mansell grins. He takes a book off the shelf called Story of the Lost Film. At the police station.
The first mention is in 1550 when he's called Bloody Bones or Rawhead. He catches children that tell lies. He sits on their bodies and gnaws on their bones with blood all over his face.
Stories like this don't just come out of thin air. There must have been an original event, like a terrible child murder or something, that inspired Bloody Bones. Then over the years, the facts are lost and the legend...
Excuse me. Common sense coming through. Masked killers are not bogeymen. The Zodiac, California, 1968, wore an executioner's hood while attacking a couple on the shore of Lake Berryessa. 7 confirmed victims in total. The Phantom, Texas, 1946, wore a white mask and attacked 8 by the light of the moon. The killer hides his true self. He presents society with a face of normality, then when night falls, he dons a mask, his true visage.
Yeah, he's a bogeyman.
He's not a bogeyman. The killer is monstrous. He is not a monster.
Well, you've just said
bottom
that he's...
Bottom line, we're looking for a loon who dresses up to kill people.
Buchan gives Miles a reasonable look. Frowning, Riley shrugs. The lights in the city shine through the night sky. The glowing lights seem to flare as the night wears on. Buchan's therapist, Morgan, walks through an empty underground car park in stylish heeled boots and a woolen overcoat. With her brunette hair tied back, she types out a text on her phone. She hasn't noticed somebody stalking her through the shadows. There's a flicker of activity and Morgan looks round. There's nobody there. She keeps walking, swapping her phone for her car keys in her handbag. The stalker nips behind a pillar behind her. Morgan looks round sharply and hurries for her car. As she gets to her car and reaches for the driver's side door handle, the masked figure lurches up behind her and pulls a cord tightly around her neck. Morgan's eyes widen as she gasps for air and claws at the cord. She loses consciousness and slumps to the ground. At the Mantises, Mansell touches the wall painting.
How'd you feel that? It's freezing.
Mansell turns around.
Kent?
He heads onto the upstairs landing.
Kent, mate.
He goes into a small bedroom and finds a doll on the bed. There's a kid's mobile hanging from the ceiling. Searching for the source of the crying, he spins round and spots a framed picture of a smiling boy on the wall. It falls, smashing the glass at the boy's neck. Petrified, Mansell bolts from the room.
What are you doing?
He passes Kent on the stairs.
I said don't break anything!
Kent follows Mansell outside.
Was that you? Was what me? Don't muck about, Kent.
The photo of the boy changes from a smile to a grimace. Morgan lies spread-eagled on the concrete beside her car in the underground car park. There's a pink cord around her neck. She wakes suddenly. She sits up and shivers, then reaches for the cord. She unties it and scans around wide-eyed. She reaches for her bag. On a rooftop overlooking the City of London, the masked figure creeps along a wall watching the buildings, which seem to distort under the figure's gaze. Chandler and Miles drive through town.
I know that Evie's description of the bogeyman isn't the most reliable, but this victim reported seeing the same thing.
They arrive in the underground car park where uniformed police are cordoning off the area around Morgan's car. Morgan sits at the back of a small ambulance. She looks shaken and fidgety.
Hello, I'm D.I. Chandler. This is D.S. Miles.
Hi.
Oh, guess I should have taken self-defense classes when I had the chance. I couldn't fight him off. I ended up having to play dead.
Probably saved your life.
Thank you. No, but I'm not crying because I'm upset. I'm very, very angry. No, I should be able to walk to my car without someone trying to rip my head off.
Of course you should.
I just would have been so much better if I could have just turned around and kicked the crap out of him, had him all trussed up, ready for you guys to take away.
Made it easier for us too.
Yeah, sir, we found a ribbon. Yeah, that's what the bastard used on me. He tied it around my neck.
Go on, go and get a cup of tea.
Come on. Oh, that'd be great, thanks. Go.
Morgan returns Chandler's hanky, then goes with Riley.
A tough girl. I like her.
Me too.
In the men's room at the police station, Chandler changes his shirt again. He drops a cufflink on the floor by mistake. He frowns at the little square cufflink, then reaches down and picks it up with the aid of a hanky. Buchan is coming up the stairwell as Morgan arrives with Riley. Buchan frowns.
Miss Lam, what are you doing here?
I got mugged.
Oh no. Are you okay?
I thought I was fine, but apparently the description I gave of the suspect matches a fairy tale goblin.
What, you saw the bogeyman?
I saw something.
She's my witness, thank you.
Riley leads Morgan away, leaving Buchan on the stairs with a thoughtful frown. He quickly heads back downstairs. Chandler enters the archive in a hurry.
Ed? Two attacks in 2 hours and no cooling off period. Is this the start of a spree?
Way ahead of you. Spree killings are defined as mass murders that occur in a number of locations within a short space of time, typically a single day or night, with victims often chosen at random, so you have no time to lose.
How do you catch a spree killer?
When they're dead.
Flashes of a burning mask. A knife penetrates flesh. Morgan's in a soft interview room with Miles and Chandler.
I began the day at the coroner's court. I had to give evidence at the inquest into the death of a former patient, Dave Watney. I'm a counsellor. He was an alcoholic. It was very sad. Then lunch, I grabbed a sandwich, and then I was at my therapy room with clients. My last appointment finished at 11.
Do you always work so late?
No, that was the fault of the inquest. All my appointments got moved on, so my clients would rather see me late than not at all.
Right, so 11 o'clock, what happened then?
Normally I arrive early so I get a space on the ground floor, but today I had to park on a lower level, so I got to my car and I knew there was someone behind me. He put the ribbon around my throat and I remember thinking I had to get his DNA under my fingernail so if I died he wouldn't get away with it. So I tried sort of scratching at his face, but the mask got in the way.
Can you describe it?
It's just sort of a creepy rubber mask. I could feel everything getting darker. It was like I was drowning. And it was at that point I thought, well, better to play dead than be dead. So I let myself drop.
And did he let you go?
Yeah. I lay on the floor and he tied the ribbon around my neck. All I wanted to do was just scream and fight, but I had to stay still. And then I could sense him walking away. So I opened my eyes and just tried to get a really good look at him.
She thinks back as the figure creeps away. In interview, she looks anxious.
Take your time.
Sorry. He was of normal height. He was wearing black, he was quite thin. He was carrying a bag over his shoulder that looked like a sack.
She smiles ruefully as tears fall, then looks at the floor.
You're doing really well.
Sorry, I've worked with victims of crime. So I know what to say and I know how to give the advice, but it's not so easy when it's you, is it?
Chandler watches her levelly.
Someone tried to kill me.
Flashback. The masked figure looms up behind her. Chandler shows her a photo of Sasha.
Do you know this girl?
She takes the photo and studies it.
No. Sorry. Was she attacked by the same guy as me?
We believe so, yes.
She's dead, isn't she?
Yes.
She gives the photograph back.
Do you know a man called Calvin Mantis?
I've heard of him. Yeah, he was a case study of how professionals could miss the warning signs. He hid the extent of his delusions very well. And he tricked all of them.
Did you meet him?
No, I just came across him in a textbook. But Calvin Mantis is in a secure unit, isn't he?
Chandler and Miles share an awkward glance. In the main office, a still-shocked Mansell stares into space wide-eyed. Riley finds Chandler at the incident board.
So? Not much on Sasha Lowood. Recently broken up with a boyfriend, TC. Don't get excited, he was out with his new girl and all of his mates at the cinema, and that's it. Sasha was cautioned about a year ago for making crank calls.
Stalkers? No enemies? No threats?
Nope, nothing. But it's early days, right?
Nothing obvious in Mantis's house to link in with Sasha. Uniforms are keeping an eye out there in case he comes home.
Dr. Simon Mortlake from Mantis's psych ward. He'll be here first thing in the morning.
Good. Get something to eat. It's going to be a long night.
Hello.
Yes, DS Mark.
Eyeing Mansell.
What's wrong with him?
Dunno.
It's been like this since we left the house.
He looks shaky.
Yeah, well, he hasn't had a drink for 24 hours.
Be it then.
Mansell gets up and, looking shifty, makes his way into the archive. He comes face to face with Buchan.
What can I do for you?
I'm not sure what I'm looking for.
A crime? A weapon? A location?
No.
Buchan sits down at his desk.
I'm interested in witnesses. People who can't explain what they saw.
Unreliable witnesses?
No. More like what they saw is impossible. But they're telling the truth.
You mean ghosts?
I know. I don't believe them either.
An unexplained phenomenon isn't proof of the supernatural. It simply means you've overlooked a perfectly rational explanation.
Yeah. That's what I'm hoping.
Mansell frowns in the interview room.
Morgan, we're just going to get someone to drive you home.
Oh, thank you. Can you take me?
Of course you can. Well, she's only round the corner. Go on. Take 20 minutes, get some fresh air.
Chandler looks a bit shocked.
Fine. I'll leave you in charge, Miles.
The moment I've been waiting for.
To Morgan.
I'll just get my keys. Miles. You can't matchmake during a murder.
Who's matchmaking? I'm not. The witness asks you to take her home. Maybe she senses a rapport with you. Maybe she'll talk to you alone, away from here, and say something she wouldn't mention in front of me.
Okay. You may have a point.
I'm full of them. You should ask me more often.
Chandler walks outside with Morgan.
I shouldn't ask an officer of your rank to ferry me home. I just feel I can trust you. I feel safer.
It's no problem.
Thanks.
He shows Morgan into the Range Rover. As he shuts the door and heads for the driver's side, he doesn't spot Kent watching them darkly from behind the station door. Kent returns to the main office and eyes the cord used to strangle Morgan.
How long can you hold your breath for?
30 seconds, then I go really red.
Yeah. You wouldn't look dead, would you?
He eyes the photograph of a smiling Morgan on the incident board. In Morgan's neat and cosy-looking apartment, there are a stack of books on psychology and body language. As Morgan potters in the adjoining kitchen, Chandler spots a row of Wisdoms on the bookshelf.
You like cricket?
Oh, they belong to my dad. He told me that everything I needed to know about life could be learned through cricket.
My father had much the same idea.
Green tea?
Oh, yes, thank you.
Chandler joins her at the kitchen island. She spots a used baking tray.
Oh.
She discards the baking sheet and wipes her hands.
You didn't see that.
What was it?
It was supposed to have been cordon papillote, but something went wrong and the paper caught fire and the whole thing went up in flames. So I have great ambitions, but I'm a terrible cook.
Well, it's not an easy dish.
Oh.
All right, it's a really easy dish. Till tonight, I thought it was foolproof.
Here.
Thank you.
You said I was the second person to describe seeing a bogeyman.
Yes.
But the first girl, Sasha Lowood, was found dead, wasn't she?
Yes.
So who gave you the description that time?
There was a survivor.
Oh. Or did the killer not know they were there?
She hid under her bed.
She's a child.
You know, I'm the one who's supposed to be asking the questions.
Sorry. It's my job too, so second nature.
He realigns a candle.
So, why did you become a counsellor?
I've always had a very clear perception. People would come to me and I would help them achieve clarity to overcome the obstacles in their lives.
Sounds like you have a gift.
Knowing what people are thinking is a curse in a relationship. No one can lie to me, so no one stays.
About to sip her tea, she looks up.
Do you lie?
Only to myself.
They share a smile.
Oh. That'll be, I arranged for an officer to watch over the house, so that'll be him now.
Oh, well, it's not necessary to...
No, I want you to sleep easy. So. I should go. Thank you for the tea.
He gives the mug back to her.
Thank you for being honest.
At the police station...
Drunk and disorderly is a ten a penny. Why is this one so interesting?
Apparently he's wearing some sort of fancy dress outfit. The arresting officer thought he might fit our profile.
Oh. Is he wearing tights?
Tights and a cape, yeah.
Well, a cape would look like a bag over your shoulder.
Yeah, but we're looking for a calculating killer, not a drunken lout. We're clutching at straws.
Our killer's still out there.
And he's not finished yet.
In the pouring rain, the masked figure climbs up onto a rooftop and passes amongst various pipes and units. Stops at the top of a metal ladder. Llewellyn finds Chandler and Miles waiting for her at the mortuary with weary looks on their faces.
Long night.
I'll let you know when it's over.
Glad to get this one started. Been a lot of talk this morning among our more susceptible members of staff about fear being a cause of death. Simply because it's not clear how she was killed.
Is it possible to die of fright?
Oh, it's a well-documented phenomena. In cultures where there's a strong belief in curses and hexes.
So you die of what? A heart attack?
But theoretically, death after fright could occur from a sudden cardiac arrhythmia, or, alternatively, from the heart being slowed or stopped by overstimulation of the vagus nerve.
How long does this process take?
Well, it's likely to be quick. But we need to exclude other causes. By starting this post-mortem examination first. Okay, well, let's start by photographing and weighing the body.
You want to wait for this, or do you want to get some breakfast?
Let's eat now.
As Llewellyn and her assistant photograph Sasha's body, both Miles and Chandler check their phones by the mortuary door. Neither of their phones is ringing. They turn to look back at Llewellyn, who frowns down at Sasha's body, then leans closer towards the head. She prizes open Sasha's mouth and looks inside.
I can see it.
Chandler shuts his eyes as Llewellyn uses a pair of tongs to drag the mobile phone out of Sasha's throat. It's pink and covered in mucus. She drops the phone into a metal dish.
I'm willing to guess. Cause of death was asphyxia.
The phone continues to ring, a flash of Sasha's shaking arm.
1938, Japan, the Tsuyama massacre. Matsuo Toi killed his grandmother, then he cut the electricity to his village and killed 30 more people. More examples, but they all make the same points. The spree killer is profoundly alienated from his society. His motive is revenge. He wants to show everyone he's a powerful force to be reckoned with.
And these spree killings end in suicide or suicide by police?
Mm. The killer embarks on the spree because, as far as he's concerned, his life is over. The spree is the end game, and he expects to die. If he survives, it's not because he planned it that way.
We'll save the homework for later, shall we? Our mantis expert has arrived and is waiting in reception.
A quick word, if you can spare a moment.
Of course.
Mars leaves Chandler with Buchan.
How do you do this job, Joe? How do you bear the weight? Not let it crush you?
The job chose me. I'm a detective. I can't do anything else.
But the dead? Do you see them at night? We when you lie down to sleep?
Chandler's eyes rove.
Yes, I do.
Do they forgive you?
I've learned to live with them. That's all you can do. They become a part of you, you know, part of your life. You never forget them.
Buchan smiles thinly and nods. He sits back down behind his desk, where he stares at the desktop with his hands in his lap.
Does that not help?
It's not the answer I was hoping for.
Chandler leaves the archive. Mansell heads into the reception, where a uniformed officer is behind the front desk.
All right, sir. That was the wall, like
it. Yes, it's just there.
A balding 50-something man sits on a bench nearby.
Mr. Mortlake, officer.
Dr. Simon Mortlake, Broughton Psychiatric Hospital.
They see Finlay Mansell. This way, please. So, you treat the mentally ill, right?
That's right.
What would you say to someone who thinks they've experienced supernatural phenomena?
I'd say they could be under stress.
Mansell nods reasonably and opens the door to the main office.
It could be a psychotic episode. Or it could be neurological, like a brain tumour.
Mansell frowns anxiously as he shows Mortlake into the office. Mortlake eyes the incident board.
Was the sound on the television on or off?
It was off. Muted.
And this girl died of asphyxia?
She had her mobile phone stuck in her throat, and the second was nearly strangled.
Mortlake approaches the board. His eyes flicker from side to side.
How telling.
He's in Chandler's office.
Mantis is the most dangerous individual I've ever encountered. His delusions are so impenetrable, he is effectively untreatable. All we could hope for was containment.
Yeah? What went wrong there?
He tore out a nurse's voice box and stole their keys.
Focus on the throat again, just like Sasha and Morgan.
Yes. The act of silencing. To this end, he killed his family for speaking too loudly and poked out his own eardrums. Oh, but still noise bothers him. Especially loud voices.
A psychiatric unit can't be a very quiet place.
No. And herein lies the paradox.
He hates noise, and he's stuck in a unit full of it. You're making him crazier.
If the world was silent, Mantis would be less volatile. He loves silent cinema, and his idol is Lon Chaney.
A scrapbook.
Mantis has a vast collection of pictures of Chaney. You know he was called a man of a thousand faces. Chaney designed his own makeup and masks to create these horrific monsters.
Did Mantis ever dress up as Chaney?
No, he wanted to, but we never indulged him.
What's this one?
That one's interesting. In 1927, Chaney made London After Midnight, a horror film with the director Todd Browning. It was said that if you saw the film, it could drive you insane, and certainly no known copies of the film exist anymore, perhaps because they were all destroyed. Mantis claimed that he had the only surviving reels of the film.
Is that true?
I really don't know. Though Mantis insisted that he had seen the film and that it was responsible for his madness.
The still from London After Midnight matches the painting on the wall in Mantis's room. In the main office.
Well, I've heard of God telling someone to kill, or the devil on a record played backwards. But a movie made me crazy, that's a new one.
What movie is it?
London After Midnight.
Ah, Todd Browning.
Oh yeah, I thought you'd have heard of it.
Every ripperologist worth his salt has heard of it. It has been said the appearance of Chaney's monster was based on Jack the Ripper. The top hat, the cloak, the bulging, staring eyes. Although there's no evidence this is what the Ripper actually looked like.
Buchan turns away from the board, then stops in his tracks.
Well, there is something. One moment, I'll be back.
I shan't wait.
Miles chuckles to himself as Buchan heads out of the office. The East London Star newspaper has a photo of Mantis under the headline, Return of the Monster.
On the 23rd of October 1928, a carpenter named Robert Williams went to see London After Midnight. The film so disturbed the balance of his mind that he suffered visions of Lon Chaney making terrifying faces at him and shouting. Robert Williams then felt compelled to attack Julia Mangan as she walked in Hyde Park. He slashed her throat with a razor and killed her.
Mantis wasn't the only person to be driven mad by this film.
It would seem not.
Chandler takes the file and heads for the incident board.
This might be useful. Good work, Ed.
Mars looks dubious. Chandler pins up a photo of the painting on Mantis's wall. Kent is at the front desk.
Just sign this, please.
Thank you.
Sign it there.
There's a crazy man with a gun.
Okay, where did you see him?
Near the Carpenter estate.
Right, can you describe him?
Black clothes, and he's wearing a freaky looking mask.
Thank you.
Kent hurries into the office. Armed police arrive on the estate.
Cover! Moving!
A masked figure shuffles along with a gun held limply in one hand. The figure seems fatter and less mobile than it has before. The police usher the public away as Chandler and the team arrive. Mars and Chandler head under police tape, flashing their badges. Kent, Riley and Mansell follow them as rain starts to fall.
Drop your weapon! They're down on the road!
I'm taking over.
Don't! They know what they're doing.
So do I.
I say again, drop your weapon!
The police chief ushers Chandler and Miles behind a car.
This is Calvin Mantis. He's acutely sensitive to noise. Shouting at him will only make him more crazy.
He was crazy when we got here.
I just want to talk to him face to face, quietly.
He's made it clear. He's not going to cooperate, sir.
This is your final warning. Put your weapon down!
Just once, I'd like to bring in a murder suspect alive.
But that's no reason to risk your life. You've been up for 2 days, you're not thinking straight.
If I don't talk to Mantis, this is nothing more than an execution.
If they say it's too dangerous to negotiate, we have to listen. You may be the ranking officer here, but these guys have years of experience. This is what they do.
Authority for lethal force has just been issued. They could shoot him at any moment.
It's out of our hands.
Wait here.
What are you playing at?
I know how to calm him down. All we need is quiet.
Well, look at him. He's clearly mad. He's irrational. You can't reason with insanity.
No, he looks distressed to me. In pain, like he's looking for help.
He'll shoot you.
I've got this, Miles.
Look, I'm telling you.
And I'm telling you, Sergeant, get out of my way.
Chandler steps into the open.
Cover him! Cover him!
The gun cops take aim over the bonnet of a squad car. The masked figure inches along the back street as Chandler holds his arms out by his side.
I want to help you, Calvin. Can you put the gun down? No, don't, please. They'll shoot you.
Mars looks anxious. Chandler frowns as the masked figure holds up the gun weakly. An officer goes down.
No, get out, boy! Get out! It wasn't him! He didn't shoot! The shot came from the roof!
The real masked killer's watching from above. He bolts for cover as the police look up and take aim. The injured cop is picked up. The rest of the team hurry past the crumpled figure in the street. Chandler eyes the figure with a frown. Miles stands beside him in the road and looks grim-faced. Kent and Riley kneel beside the figure. The gun has been sewn to the figure's gloved hand. Riley unmasks a young black man whose lips have been sewn together.
Sir.
Oh my God.
His mouth's been sewn up.
Kent opens the gun in the man's hand.
It's not a real gun. It's just a toy. It's wired to his hand.
He's just a teenager.
It's not Mantis. We've shot a victim.
Miles holds his fingers up.
You were that close to being killed.
He storms off, leaving Chandler with a frown. ITFC audio description. Next time.
People will die tonight, and I can do nothing to save them.
What have you got against Morgan? You've obviously got a problem with her. What is it? Does anyone else here have another suspect in mind? A name, a motive, a link to the victims?
The dead man walking.